best way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, the meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And as if that isn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency. So it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we really need you to. Thank you.
The time now is 2:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Okay, individuals, you need to unmute yourself so you can start your program.
We got it.
Every day is Earth Day. Every day. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. I'm Ken Gale. And we have Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for November 4th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
We have several topics for you today. The Environmental Bond Act, the Right to Repair Act, continued threats to Liberty State Park, and of course, COP27.
Paul Prezendeux is a board member of the New York State Association of Conservation Commissions and the newest member of our Ecologic Collective. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Sally. It was an honor to be on Ecologic last year to discuss COP26 that occurred in Glasgow, Scotland, and I'm happy to be a member of the show now as part of the collective.
Great. In September, we talked with Sam Pessin from Friends of Liberty State Park. Preparing for the show, Ken Donna and I visited the 600-acre park on the Hudson River waterfront in Jersey City, a stone's throw from the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. The park's Cabin Point Natural Area is a stop on the Atlantic Flyway, as well as a nesting spot for many species of birds. The park is a green oasis in vibrant urban Jersey City, a tranquil place to relax, restore, and play. From the Pollinator Garden and Nature Center Pond and Wooded Path, the historic railroad station and the picnic tables under the trees and open lawns, one can spend a day, as we did, simply enjoying a pleasant walk, a pleasant weather, and good company. However, a National Park Service proposal would make tourist helicopters' loud, buzzing overhead disruption more intrusive and harmful to the park experience. The service has published a draft agreement that would move the tourist helicopter flights directly over the park, basically privatizing its airspace, and also move the circle park closer to the circle path closer to the park than it is now. A constant barrage of noisy helicopters is hardly anyone's idea of a great park experience. Yet that is what the National Park Service has proposed for this New Jersey State Park. The goal is to reduce the helicopter noise for tourists on Liberty Island, Ellis Island, and Governor's Island. But they cluelessly and cruelly ignore the many people enjoying Liberty State Park. New York City-based advocacy group Stop the Chop, which fights to limit non-essential helicopter flights over New York City waters, notes that this would also lessen the quality of life of Lower Manhattan and South Brooklyn residents. Already there are complaints about noisy helicopters. New Jersey's 311 system has a whole webpage devoted to these complaints, which would surely increase under the National Park proposal. Brooklyn Bridge Park is protected from excessive noise. Helicopters arriving at or departing from the downtown Manhattan heliport must do so from the south. Where's New Jersey's park protection? Liberty State Park is to Jersey City much like Central Park is to Manhattan. Both are free open parkland with little development, open space, wildlife, gardens, limited roadways, water. Both are known for birding, for being a peaceful place for varied activities in a busy city. There's one important difference. Tourist helicopters are limited to flying over water, so they make no loud, noisy flights over Central Park. Being on the Hudson, Liberty State Park is already in closer proximity to these disruptive flights. In addition to noise pollution, of course, helicopters pollute the air through which they fly. A helicopter creates 43 times the air pollution of a single car, almost 100 pounds per hour of carbon dioxide. To date, there's not a one-issue group focused on helicopter noise in New Jersey, but Hudson County Congressman Alvo Ceres and local advocates have been active for a few years. The public is being urged to comment on the National Park Service's draft agreement. Now is the time for you to speak up. The deadline is November 21st, so to submit your public comment, you can go to the Friends of Liberty State Parks website, www.folsp.org. That's their acronym, FOLSP, Friends of Liberty State Park. Please click on the first banner on the page right below the menu. That's www.folsp.org. Liberty State's park future is immediately threatened by tourist helicopters constantly flying right overhead, just above this treasured, scarce urban public space. We must protect the people's rights to enjoy public parks throughout the world.
November 8th is Election Day. You have a chance to make your voice heard on a very important ballot initiative this year. Early voting is happening now. New Yorkers will vote in a public referendum on an environmental bond act for the first time in over 25 years. Turn your ballot over to vote. Bond acts allow the state to take on debt to fund projects for a specific purpose instead of raising taxes. It is huge, with billions for infrastructure which has been neglected for years. A lot is included: climate change, clean air, clean water, parks, forests, open spaces, flood risk reduction, recreation, and environmental justice. At least 35% of the total funding must be spent in disadvantaged and priority communities. The bond would allow us to plan ahead and avoid some of the disasters that could be looming in our future if we don't repair our broken infrastructure and prepare for rising floodwaters and wind. It will be paid for from the New York State operating budget over a period of 20 years. In New York City, the bond is listed as Proposition 4, Proposition 1 in the rest of the state. Same bond, different number. The Bond Act will help communities make critical updates to water and sewer lines, replace lead pipes, and maintain water treatment plants to ensure our drinking water is safe and clean. We all need access to parks and open space for physical and mental health. It will fund environmental restoration, farmland protection, wildlife conservation, and park improvements. For too long, many marginalized communities have been denied access to clean air and water. The Bond Act will address inequities by directing 35% of total funding to disadvantaged communities. It will improve public health and reduce air pollution by paying for clean school buses, planting street trees, and retrofitting public buildings to improve energy efficiency and air filtration. This is also a Jobs Act. If approved by voters, the Bond Act would support many thousands of local, family-sustaining, working-class jobs. People will have to be hired to get all that improvement done. New York State passed a law 3 years ago to cut our greenhouse gas emissions, but there were no details. The Environmental Bond Act is supposed to supply some of those details. The Bond Act would also unlock matching federal funds in the big domestic legislation that President Biden signed in August. Mary Althoffer of the Associated Press said, broadly speaking, the idea is to protect against climate change and at the same time stop making our pollution problems worse, end quote. Under current rules, you have to wait for a disaster to happen before you can access billions of federal dollars to help future-proof against the next disaster. That's one reason why a lot of projects that were talked about immediately after Sandy did not get started until 5, 6, 7 years later. Money from the Bond Act, if it is approved, could be spent on projects in places where a disaster could happen, but hasn't yet. Will this really bring us closer to the climate goals set by New York State in 2019? Yes. Private industry isn't going to invest unless executives think that infrastructure projects are really going to happen. State and local projects will go a long way, but they have to be funded. Who supports the bond issue and who opposes it? Mary Althoffer reports that environmental and climate groups are for it, of course, as is Governor Kathy Hochul, and there isn't a huge amount of opposition. Hochul's opponent, Lee Zeldin, has not taken a position. Many Republicans in New York appear to have concluded that denying climate change and the need to take positions here. Crazy. The Conservative Party came out against the Bond Act, and the Citizens Budget Commission warned against getting closer. Paul Rodriguez, who's running for state controller on the Republican and Conservative Party line, said this is not the time to be borrowing more money. His opponent, the Democratic incumbent, Thomas DiNapoli, is for it. In much of this state, the bond issue will appear on the back of the ballot, not on the front, with the candidates. Will voters bother to turn their ballots over? We'll see. We hope so. The environment should not be a partisan issue.
Since June, the Digital Fair Repair Act has been sitting on Governor Kathy Hochul's desk waiting for a signature. The bill took more than a year to get through the state legislature. It would force manufacturers to offer documentation, tools, and parts to customers at independent repair stores, according to Vice.com, which reports that the governor is reviewing the bill. In the entire legislature, there were only 6 votes against it, 2 in the Assembly, 4 in the Senate. The bill, widely popular with the public and the legislature alike, has only one real category of opponents, manufacturers. As a historic first, it is the first such bill in the nation to be passed. The bill's sponsor, Assemblywoman Pat Fahey of Albany, has said that it gained extra attention from opponents, making it a David versus Goliath battle. During the lengthy period of consideration, heavy lobbying from Apple, John Deere, and medical device manufacturers weakened the bill, which now exempts farm equipment and medical devices, although it will still cover consumer electronics. The Federal Trade Commission, calling the bill a milestone, has confirmed that it does not harm intellectual property rights. For the bill to become law, all that's needed is for Governor Hochul to sign it by the end of the year. She may simply have been waiting until after the election, which is expected to be close. However, she is unlikely to be alone for long. This is a national issue. President Biden's executive order in support of the right to repair has led Apple to put out manuals and tools that would allow customers and independent shops to repair their products. And perhaps in response to the trend that seems to be shaping up, Samsung is rolling out a new maintenance mode that securely locks away one's personal data on a Galaxy phone to ensure privacy when sending a phone out for repair. The technician can do whatever is needed to repair the phone, and upon return, the owner will be signing in with the regular password. And, of course, you should back up your data before any repair. Having the Digital Fair Repair Act signed would be an important step forward for customers and independent repair shops. Right to repair broken equipment. Another step would be the bill currently in the North Carolina legislature, where farmers are watching closely. Farmer Michael McPherson was quoted by Bay News 9 saying, "If it's a Saturday afternoon and you break down, it's going to be hard to get someone to come out. If it's something I can fix myself, if I can get the parts and it's fairly simple, I can do that myself and keep going. With many acres to cover, having a combine tractor idle waiting for repair can really slow down the harvest." And Paul has some interesting things to say about COP27.
Yeah, Paul, yeah. You joined us for our show on COP26 last year. What can we expect in Egypt this year?
Yes, everyone, the Conference of Parties for 27 is happening soon, beginning Sunday, November 6th, and ending on Friday, November 16th. We have high hopes for the goals and issues that will affect us all this year, especially since President Biden and our U.S. climate envoy, John Kerry, will be in attendance this year. Before I talk about some high goals, I'll just give a little bit of background about the Conference of Parties, how it started following the 1992 Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit to facilitate international cooperation in sustainability to protect our global supply chain and also the safety of the entire animal kingdom. This year, I hope there is a strong emphasis on the Paris Agreement that was agreed upon in 2015, which aims to avoid devastating impacts of climate change by us adhering to the needed 2 degrees, limiting the temperature rise to the 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. It's actually the 1.5 degrees Celsius rise that we need to make sure that we adhere to make sure that we're in accordance with the scientific community. But this year, the United Nations Environmental Program's emission gap shows that the international community is falling way short of the Paris goals of 2015. Since we right now have no credible pathway to meeting the 1.5 degrees Celsius increase. Right now, we are actually on a pathway of having a 2.8 degrees Celsius increase. And unless we do what we need to do in terms of international cooperation, things will be getting very, very bad in the near future. Right now, the Paris Agreement in 2015 set aside $100 billion that will be allocated from the developed world annually, and in between 2020 and 2025, we do not have any vocal commitment from the international community to make sure that we're making sure that we're providing that economic support to make sure that we have the needed carbon capture and decarbonization technologies implemented in developing nations. In the Paris Agreement had 198 member states of the United Nations that supported it, but it's just really about us making sure that we have complete transparency in what needs to be done in regards to our international community. Otherwise, we're going to see what occurred in 2020, last year, with the COP27 conference, where we had nations such as India that were putting together decarbonization strategies and meeting net zero by 2070. And that's a dangerous precedent because a nation such as India is third in ranking in our global community for carbon emissions. So this year at Conference of Parties, I hope there's complete transparency of what we need to do through the lens of environmental economics of making sure that we are holding nations accountable that are helping address carbon decarbonization, offsetting our greenhouse gas emissions, and making sure that developing nations are leading the charge. We're proud to be Americans, but we have to make sure that with that pride of America, we're well aware of how the dynamics are of who is contributing per capita to global greenhouse gas emissions. You know, over 82.5% of the global population resides outside of the United States of America, Canada, and Europe, which is considered the global north. So it's up to the global north, which represents an overwhelming minority of the global population, to do what needs to be done, leverage our economic power to be able to put together the equitable infrastructure to protect our developing nations. It's not the nations such as Pakistan or Bangladesh that are leading carbon emissions. It's really us in the developed nations that's to make sure that we lead that change. And also supporting regional conversations. We have the African Continent Coalition delegation for the Conference of Parties that will be in attendance that will be strongly talking about the unfair and unjust proliferation of natural resources is happening throughout the continent of Africa. While we have nations that will be at the Conference of Parties in Egypt talking about needed investment in renewable energy and decarbonization and transition over fossil fuels, currently right now throughout the continent in Africa, there is over $400 billion worth of natural gas extraction that is happening, being led by the global north. So there has to be a sense of accountability. There has to be a sense of transparency of what nations are contributing in regards to greenhouse gas inventories, and also needed cooperation and listening to all of our member states on an equitable playing field, regardless of the strength of their GDP. Talking about this.
Thanks, Paul.
Now, if it's anything like COP26 in Paris, there will be more talk than action, and the status quo will be maintained, and the crisis will continue. Now, you might hear the term nature-based solutions a lot. This is the polluting industry's new greenwashing term. You'll notice that it's not explained in detail. It sounds nice, and it's a great way to mislead people. I was on an international webinar about COP27. Local groups in Africa say nature-based solutions is what they say when they're doing land grabs, adding more debts, and more water loss. They called it green colonialism. They take agricultural land and cover it with solar farms and make what's called green hydrogen to make electricity to export to Europe. Local people lose out on a food source while corrupt governments enrich themselves. Climate smart agriculture is another false solution. It's another name for agribusiness, land grabs, and exports. And the resulting immigrants and eco-refugees from Africa to Europe are being killed. COP27 hasn't even started yet, and they're arresting environmentalists in Egypt. Any good comes to the conference, our guests on the November 18th episode of Ecologic will let us know.
As usual, the time flies by, and we need to wrap it up. But thanks to our listeners for joining us. Later this month, you can tune in for more in-depth coverage of these topics. And join us next week on Friday, November 11th at 2:30 p.m. for our report on the broken disaster recovery system.
We love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter eco-logic.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Right to repair. COP27, Liberty State Park, and the Environmental Bond Act. What mainstream media show would cover such diverse topics? WBAI is independent and covers lots of topics for our listeners. We don't accept ads or donations from corporations or foundations, which is part of the reason that you hear us asking for your support so often. We need you for Ecologic and WBAI to exist.
Ecologic and WBAI continue to offer you important news, information, and entertainment. Radio might seem free, but there are costs. Like everyone, the station has rent to pay. As an employer, we have a shoestring payroll and a call center. Our listener-supported radio station needs you.
So to support Ecologic and have it be a win-win, you can choose from our many interesting premiums. Most can be found both on their own webpage, ecologic.wbai.org, and on give2wbai.org. Our topics range from renewal energy to indigenous rights to celebration of nature programs. Go to ecologic.wbi.org, leave out the www, and donate in the name of your favorite program, Ecologic. To become a member or contribute monthly as a BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We love to see those BAI buddy pledges.
We work hard every week to bring you new information and guests who are on the front lines of many environmental issues. Most of the WBAI staff, including us, are volunteers. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
Our thanks to excellent engineer Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you.
I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And with Paul Prestonju, I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Friday, November 11th at 2:30 p.m. for our report on our broken disaster recovery system.
I'm Cornelius Eady, and I'd like to invite you to tune in to our new poetry program, Open House, presented by Poets House and hosted by me and the amazing, blazing Patricia Stairs Jones.
Join us on Fridays at 9 p.m. for a weekly exploration of the breadth of the contemporary poetry world.
Each week on Open House, we'll interview poets and their advocates on their approaches to poetry, discussing their work, creative practice, and who inspires them. Plus, our guests will read their own poems and favorites by other poets, showing how poets connect to important writers, past and present.
Be there for Open House at 9 p.m. on Fridays. See you there.
See you at the house.
From WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Stuart Rhodes, leader of the Oath Keepers, took the stand in federal court today to defend himself against charges of seditious conspiracy for his involvement in the January 6 Capitol riot. Rhodes asserted his unsupported belief that the 2020 presidential election was unconstitutional and invalid because of pandemic-related changes made to voting procedures in some states. He also sought to downplay the Oath Keepers' desire for violence. He contrasted his group with the Proud Boys, another far-right organization, saying they, quote, want to go and street fight, close quote, while the Oath Keepers preferred to stay calm. Over the course of 4 weeks, more than 24 witnesses, including current and former members of the Oath Keepers, have testified against Rhodes and backed up the Justice Department's case that he and four other defendants were behind a violent plot to stop the transfer of presidential power. Tom Barrack, a longtime ally of Donald Trump, was acquitted on all federal foreign lobbying charges at a courthouse in Brooklyn today. Barrack was acquitted of acting as an unregistered foreign agent in the U.S. Barrack, his former employee Matthew Grimes, and an Emirati businessman named Rashid al-Malik were indicted last year and accused of acting as a secret back channel for the United Arab Emirates. Barrack also faced one count of obstruction of justice and 6 counts of making false statements. He was acquitted of all 7 of those counts as well. During the trial, Donald Trump posted on his Truth Social account calling Barrack a, quote, highly respected businessman, close quote, and saying that he did not believe he was a foreign agent of the UAE. Barrack is a longtime friend of Trump's and served as chairman of his presidential inaugural committee and advised him as president. The U.S. economy added over 260,000 jobs in October, and average hourly pay rose 4.7% from a year ago. Both measures were down from September, but still show a resilient labor market. The unemployment rate rose from a 5-decade low of 3.5% to 3.7%. Job gains were spread across industries last month, with healthcare, manufacturing, and certain white-collar jobs all recording tens of thousands of new workers. But some sectors, such as housing and technology, have seen hiring slow amid rising borrowing costs triggered by interest rate increases. The generally strong labor market data means the Federal Reserve might feel compelled to continue its historically aggressive interest rate campaign meant to cut inflation. The Fed announced a 3/4 point rate hike on Wednesday.